Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The best Giants talk in the Bay is on 95.7 The Game. Reaction to every pitch.
Miller throws. He got him with the fastball. Miller's pointing at all the Reds.
Every home run.
High drive! Left field! Out of here!
And every big play.
A little slow roller. Chapman. Barehand! Got it!
It's your fix for Giants baseball.
It is a dream come true, but it's a very recent dream.
The Orange and Black Weekend Wrap.
Eldridge, high drive, center field, out of here.
Right field, Eldridge.
The game is tied.
We just made the season. Everything
number
for the next 15 years, the future, the present. The future. He's asleep upstairs right now.
Hello there. Welcome into Orange and Black Weekend Wrap. And Sam Lumman alongside Dan Devone. You're hearing the stylings of Steven Rizzotto behind the glass. And we're coming in with a Bryce Eldridge home run. So that means something good happened in last night's Giants game, right? It means that maybe it was a happy ending. But it was an enjoyable night. At the corner of 30, I can't even say it with a straight face.
Well,
that was one of the worst baseball games I've ever attended last night. Giants lose 5-2 to the Rockies. Yes, the Bryce Eldridge home run was an awesome moment, and it does make up for a lot of last night. But holy hell, Dan, that was a battle between two of the worst teams in the National League record-wise last night. And when you look on the field, yeah, that very much looked like a battle between two of the worst teams in the National League last night. In fact, by winning percentage, that actually was the two worst teams in the National League last night. Giants this morning waking up with a 410 winning percentage, a game ahead of the last place Rockies with a 402 winning percentage. Yeah, that was, other than that one little 9-second highlight that we came in with, that was a rough one last night.
The Giants have been, I want to say, around 500 through June and July, which, you know, you'll take when you consider how bad they were at the beginning of the year. August has been bad. And we talk about this just about every week, how Tony Vitello has got to finish strong. Maybe he doesn't have to finish strong. That is a foregone conclusion. Either he's staying or he's going. Maybe those decisions have already been made. But you'd like to finish strong, and I know you've alluded to the fact that now that he's got a younger roster, let's see what he can do with it. But this is not going well over the last couple of weeks. And San Francisco, it's not only isolated to last night, but I'd say over the last rash of games, not only losing, but the way they're losing. I mean, this is not good fundamental baseball. We'll just leave it at that.
No, it's been really bad, Dan. And as we're coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios, Laughing Monk, Righteously Brewed in San Francisco, you're right. I did say give Tony a younger roster. Let's see what he can do. Let's see if he can mold these guys. The reality is you needed to give Tony the younger roster back in spring training. I think by now things have just gone so far off the rails with this season that, you know, I don't know how you're not getting it back on track. You're going to keep seeing games like this. And one thing Tony talks about, you know, in terms of what you want to see the rest of the year, because obviously throw wins and losses out the window. You're not evaluating this team off of wins and losses the rest of the year, because if you do that, you're going to lose your everlasting mind. He talks about, you know, he calls it competitive effort. And I do like that term. You know, are you seeing a competitive effort out there? And from some guys, you are. Bryce Eldridge, you are still seeing that from him. We saw Jonah Cox recalled last night. He had a great catch in the first inning. I think that was to start the game off, or might have been the second batter of the game. Mickey Moniak, second batter of the game, hits a ball out to deep center field. It looked from where I was sitting in the press box like I might have gotten out. I don't know, but Coxie, he leapt right up and made a great catch there.
He's a good defender.
I like him a lot because kid's got a great attitude as well. And you know, Tony was talked about it pregame. In fact, we'll hear from Tony on this a little bit. But Cox, the guy who, you know, he's going to be playing all over the place, not just the outfield. He wants to be that utility, you know, fielder guy as well. So you're seeing snippets here and there. Overall, though, Dan, last night, if you're looking for a competitive effort, that was not it. You were not finding it last night. That was a slop fest of baseball last night. Not just by the Giants, the Rockies, too. Like, there's the Jake McCarthy bunt in the third. Landon Roop tries to get him, throws it into right field. McCarthy rounds first too much and gets tagged. And, you know, I tweeted out the time, you know, the Giants might be the Giants, but the Rockies are still the Rockies. And, who's laughing now?
I am rooting against the Giants.
I was totally expecting a Cosell laugh there, but that was a good one, too. Good job, Rosado.
It's really sort of hitting rock bottom here. I mean, we've been a rock bottom for a while, but believe it or not, we're sort of going into places that we've never traveled before as far as just ineptitude with this team. And I think, you know, we always talk about, at least I do, Pat Murphy is sort of the benchmark of the Milwaukee Brewers, who always overachieve. Yeah, they have a good team, and they got maybe the best pitching in baseball. This side of the Los Angeles Dodgers, especially when you get to the postseason, you pare it down to three starters. But what is the reason for the success? What's the template? What's the structure? It's the way they play, right? It's fundamentals. It's running the bases. It's not committing errors. It's just being smart. And those things you can control. And those things, unfortunately or fortunately, are usually just a reflection of coaching. Like, either that's embedded and it's either taught and it's enforced. Like, there's certain things you can do as a young player, right? Maybe you can't catch up to a 98-mile slider on the black, but you certainly can play smart, fundamental baseball, and that should be a reflection of the organization. And right now, the Giants and the Colorado Rockies, as you mentioned, look like two teams that are two of the worst in baseball, which they are. And I think they're like 5-5 over the last 10 games. They're sort of the season series, or 6-5.
The Rockies lead the season series 6-5.
6-5.
The Giants need to win these next two games to win the season series against a Rockies team that we just heartily laugh at.
Oh, God.
And that should tell you just about everything. So I understand the injuries, but to me, what's even more alarming is the way they're playing baseball. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, I'm sorry, but all fingers point at Tony Vitello, and this is just an organization right now that's going south.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the boneheaded mistakes. I want to play some that Tony said post-game in a minute, because there were plays in that game last night that just you scratch your head. Not just the Landon Roop play. There was a Christian Kos play where Sullivan was on third, and Mickey Moniak hits a chopper to second, and, you know, Kos, instead of getting the easy out at first, tries to go home, which I got it. I understood in the moment why you would try and do that, but you need to get a perfect throw there from short. And even if Willie Adames was at short at that time, I don't know if he's making that play. That would have been a difficult play for Brandon Crawford to make. And Kos, to his credit, the throw was in time, albeit to the wrong side of the plate. A better place throw, maybe you get Sullivan there, but it's just in that moment, you gotta go throw the ball to first there. There's the base running mistakes too, Christian Kos. I don't mean to pick on Christian Kos, unfortunately, but there's another ball where grounded Ezekiel Tovar at short. And Dan, anybody who was around to watch the Mauricio Dubon era of Giants baseball knows that when a ground ball's hit in front of you, you don't try to advance. Mm. You know, that was something that Dubon did all the time. And Christian Kos did that. He tried to advance, got caught in a pickle. But again, the Rockies are still the Rockies. And they ended up fumbling that play away. Kos was able to get back to second base. So you avoid a disaster only because the other team you're going against is so fundamentally unsound. And Tony was asked about, you know, the fundamental errors, not just on the Giants, but on the Rockies as well, postgame. Here's what he had to say about that.
I mean, there was a quirky one there with McCarthy. It was interesting with the two-strike bunt attempts and then the flare. But really, the play Roop had was kind of a do-or-die with how the bunt was put down, and he missed arm side, which is, you know, typically the way that deal goes down. And, you know, the way the base runner got caught up, you could pull each one of them aside and say, you know, it's an exception here or there. I know they play a good brand of baseball on the position side. It's tough to pitch there. It just is. I'm sure it's different when they go on the road for their pitchers. But speaking for our own team, we need to get better in a lot of different areas. So, you know, again, you could pull those out and make an exception for all of them. Just the one thing we have to do is throw strikes. I mean, you can say this guy hit a home run and this guy didn't get a hit with a runner in scoring position, but we walked seven, they walked one. That's all that to me. You know, we should be sitting here saying 3-2 game, and one of those mistakes could have cost the game. But to me, those are secondary to that. The one thing we can't do is throw the ball to the wrong base when we have a team meeting about it before the game. Can't do it anyway, but especially on a day where we literally have a meeting about it.
It's that last part there, Dan, about throwing the ball to the wrong base on a day where you have meetings about doing that. Like, I've had that happen here where, you know, we'll have a producer meeting, you know, don't do this mistake, and then I'll do it the next day, and then I get yelled at even a bit more by our boss, Matt Nahegian. Like, that's about as bad as you can get to make a mistake the day of being told not to make that mistake. I mean, that's just where this team is at right now.
Yeah, but again, how much of this is on Vitello?
I think it's a massive that's not a great reflection on Tony. Yeah. Absolutely. No, none of this is. I think it speaks to your players. It does speak to how much you are connecting with your players. And even more so, you know, after the game, you know, we do our post game stuff and we're walking back up to the press box, and one of the writers is like, so wait a minute, which play was he talking about there when he mentioned the play going to the wrong base? Because we weren't really sure. My guess is it was that Christian Koss play. There's also maybe the Victor Barracudo error where he got the fly ball out in left. And I don't know if he was trying to throw to third or home. He somehow ended up splitting the bases, and the ball went over the catcher, Andrew Kisner's head, around the backstop, and both runners end up advancing a base there. I don't know which play that Tony was talking about. The fact that there's multiple plays where you don't know if the guy threw to the right base or not on a day where you literally had a team meeting about throwing to the right base. Like, Dan, you mentioned rock bottom, and we got a special guest in the station today. We got our guy live in
person. That's a heck of an segue. We've hit rock bottom. Ruderman's here.
Ruderman's here, but Ruderman was said earlier, you know, this last night wasn't rock bottom. This whole season has been rock bottom. And there's your anchor. Yeah, that feels pretty appropriate, actually. This has been a rock bottom season for the San Francisco Giants. So on that note, 888-957-9570 is the number to call or text. We take any and all Giants takes here on the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap, and just good Lord, holy hell. Giants fans, call in and yell about this team. Whatever you got. I just don't swear when you do
it. Well, I think, you know, we should try and maintain some level of trying to be constructive in all of this,
yeah.
Right? I mean, we can do sports talk radio and scream at everybody for one of the worst teams in baseball, but that's been done to death. I guess what I'd like to see is how do you get out of this and try and be somewhat, you know, structured as far as what logistically, how do you get better? Now, is it the players? Is it Vitello? Is it Posey, who I know you want to get into and talking about the GM of the San Francisco Giants? But as we just relegate maybe this segment to Tony Vitello, I'm sort of on the fence. Like, yeah, I think, you know, a part of me thinks that he should not come back and that he's beyond his skis and this is too much for him. But I'll be completely honest with you. I mean, if this provides a learning curve for him so that he's a better manager next year, I mean...
Oh, are you coming back around on Tony?
No, I'm not coming back around. I'm just like, he doesn't do anything so offensive where I'm like, God, get rid of him. I mean, I'm probably 70-30 that he should go, but there's a part of me that understands that he was handed a bad roster and that maybe this guy has the right personality. He just needed a year to understand how to do this. But, I mean, these last 6 weeks of baseball, if they continue in this trend, does not bode well for him. Him specifically, the Giants and Buster Posey, that's a whole other conversation. I'm just looking at this as to whether or not he can stave off a firing. And listen, you can lose games, but you got to be more buttoned up than this.
Yeah, and I do think right now I do think that Tony is probably going to come back. You also got to remember, Dan, I mean, the trade deadline was less than 2 weeks ago. I believe it was 2 weeks ago this coming Monday. And you saw this team completely changed almost overnight in terms of what the lineups look like. I mean, you look at the lineup last night. Victor Barracudo was batting cleanup. I mean, you got the only real big leaguers that guys were probably familiar with. Jung-Hoo Lee was in the lineup. Eldridge, who did go deep, was in the lineup. Rafael Devers in the lineup. The rest of that lineup, though, I mean, yeah, we've seen bits from Jonah Cox. Oslivas Basabe, it's been an interesting story. Christian Koss, again, it was kind of a rough night for him. But the lineup is just not inspiring right now. And you kind of had to know this was coming after the deals that were made, and you're going to start going through growing pains. And Tony was asked about the growing pains after the game last Saturday, and he was like, you know, it doesn't have to be growing pains. It doesn't have to be painful. I mean, it's baseball. There's going to be growth. There's going to be pain, but there doesn't really need to be growing pains. But there's just going to be. That's just what it's going to be like. That is what happens when you are a team that, let's say, the Giants don't want to say it. We will say it. They are rebuilding. This is part of what that looks like. Now, at some point, Dan, if you want to talk about it being constructive, how does it get better? You're going to see these guys play through their mistakes. Hopefully they learn from their mistakes. Hopefully they get coached up on their mistakes. And you're going to see a slow shift from, instead of, you know, three or four bonehead moments a game, it'll be two or three bonehead moments a game, and you'll see an extra positive here or there. The growth will come. This is just part of it. You got to take the lumps early on, because again, a lot of these guys are getting thrust in the lineup on a regular basis for the first time this season or the last couple weeks. There is a settling in period, and I know no one likes to hear that, but we'll see towards the end of this month and into September, if we start seeing, you know, small fundamental improvements, that's your sign that things are starting to trend in a positive direction. But again, it feels like we're fishing for positives at this point.
Well, when you say improvements, I guess we're sort of conflating things. Are you talking about someone like Barracuda, or you're talking about these young players catching up to major league pitching or being able to play at this level, or are you talking about the fundamentals? Because I think you expect these young players are going to struggle, right? Because they're playing against they're being rushed to the majors. The bigger question is, can you play situational baseball? In other words, are you, you're taught, not at the minor leagues, you're taught little leagues, for crying out loud. Think one play ahead. If this ball is hit to me right now, where am I going with the baseball?
Yeah, are you throwing to the right base, as we went over in the meeting before the game?
To me, like, that's within your control. The other stuff for younger players, whether they can catch up to a 90-mile-an-hour, off speed, or a heater over 100 miles an hour, I mean, that stuff, that's the physical. There's nothing Tony Vitello or the players, to your point, they'll make their mistakes, and maybe this final 6 weeks will be beneficial to them. More importantly is the other stuff. Like, that has to improve. And that's where you're at in terms of these young players. Like, where are they at as far as playing fundamental buttoned-up baseball? And again, I see that as a direct reflection on the head coach, Tony Vitello.
Well, yeah, it becomes a reflection on the head coach, because, again, you want to know, like, are your players digesting your coaching staff's messaging? Is it getting into the ears, getting into the brains, or is it going in one ear and out the other? When it's that latter, then you start to get worried, like, are these guys tuning out this coaching staff? And that starts to get concerning, because that's when you get to the point where, like, oh, now you're starting to worry about losing the clubhouse.
I don't think anyone's in a position where they're going to tune out the coaching staff.
I would hope not. But
the question is the coaching staff, it's one thing to say, hey, you need to do this. Or it's all about, we talk about communication, right? I as a coach, how am I communicating that message to you? Am I looking you in the eye and like, listen, this is what you do or you don't play here? Or is it just like, I know Tony Vitello wants his players to think of him as a teammate. It's like, hey, we need to get better. It's all about the messaging. Mm-hmm. It's all about the communication.
And how that message
It's the player development. We always use that word. And that's how you differentiate a good manager from a bad manager. And that's what it is that we need. That's the X factor when it comes to Tony Vitello.
No, and I think part of the way you're going to see that is through the performance on the field. Are you eliminating these small mistakes? Those are the signs you're going to be looking for. And again, last night against a team that is just not good. The Rockies are not a good baseball team. Unfortunately, neither are the Giants.
They look like it.
No, they look like two sides of the same coin. And again, because they're the two worst teams in the National League. It's the National League's toilet bowl this weekend, Dan. That's what we're getting right now between these two teams. And again, I don't know what the messaging is like from this coaching staff. I mean, they got smart coaches on this staff. You got Ron Washington working with these guys. They're all still putting in the work. You know, I saw him work with Bryce and Jonah yesterday. Didn't see Willie out there. Willie's still battling with the back issue right now. Seems like he's day-to-day on that. In fact, we did talk to Tony about that pregame. So we can maybe hear from him in a minute on that. But as far as the messaging, Dan, I don't know how they're getting it across.
I think
if you're basing it off the results on the field, though, something needs to change about it.
Well, if something needs to change, then maybe you're talking about changing a manager. Because let me ask you this. You follow this team all year long. If you bring him back next year, is there a feeling that you're associating Tony Vitello with losing at this point? In other words, the minute you hear his voice and the way he does things, it's just like, it's the same vibe.
No.
Because sometimes you just change. Like Chad Tracy with the Boston Red Sox, he's an interim guy, but they changed for the sake of change. It wasn't necessarily because he's a better manager. Sometimes you do things just to get the stench out of the room.
Like you think the players are kind of associate Tony
but sometimes you just need to change things because once losing and that bug infiltrates a clubhouse, it's hard to eradicate with the same people.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
No, because I think what you're trying to hope to go into next year with is a clean slate. You know what? Last year stunk. Mistakes were made. We learned from those mistakes.
It's got to be a one-off.
Let's try this.
The outlier.
This is the real year one. You know, this is year zero. This is the get the mistakes out of the way year. Yeah, you don't want to be in this situation, but the reality is you are. Your best hope is coming in the next year is that you've set a tone that, you know what? Let's just flush away last year. Yeah. Burn the tape.
Well, that's the big question. Was that just a one-off this year, just sort of the outlier, or is it systemic? And if it's systemic, then it might be on the shoulders of one Tony Vitello.
Honestly, Dan, it could be one of those complicated situations where there's a little bit of both that's going on. Because, I mean, I do think it's just part of it is the bullpen. I think you had a historically bad bullpen this year that no doubt. We could have, like Steven Rizzo said, this could have been one of the worst bullpens in franchise history before the season. And I was like, oh, come on, it's not going to be that bad. I think a lot of people were kind of thinking like me, like, oh, there's no way it's going to be that bad. Unfortunately, all those people were within the Giants organization. I don't think you're going to get as disastrous a bullpen next year, you would think. I think Buster, hopefully, with all the grief he's got.
Rodriguez is going to be back, right?
Randy Rodriguez will be back, but again, I don't know what he'll look like after Tommy John. As far as the rest of this bullpen, I mean, Brubaker might have to come back next year with how well he's been pitching. But I don't know what this bullpen's going to look like next year. You're assuming it's going to look a little bit better. You're assuming guys like Bryce and Jonah Cox are going to be a little bit better going into next year. You still got Jung-Hoo Lee, who looks like he's arrived. He'll be around next year. Hopefully, Willie Adames is healthy and able to get off to a better start next year. You're banking a lot of hopes and maybes and ifs, but I do think this year is just such a buzzard luck year that just by flipping the calendar and getting to a new year, you'll see some slight improvement, but this team could lose 98 games, Dan, and still come into next year, and they could still be a 90-loss team. And it's still improvement, you know, 90 losses versus 98, but like...
It's not the improvement you're looking
exactly.
for.
Exactly. What kind of numbers are we talking about here?
I don't think it's a... Call me crazy. I don't think it's a rebuild, and I stand by this. I don't think they're that far away. There was a time, just a few years ago, where you looked at that team, and you're like, yeah, you need to blow this up, because there wasn't one position from Yastrzemski... right on through to Mitch Haniger and Nick Ahmed at shortstop. There wasn't one position where you're like, that guy can't come back. When I look at this team right now, Devers is a first baseman who can hit. You're going to have a second baseman in Schmidt, who's legitimate. Your shortstop Adames has proven. I mean, say what you will about Chapman. I don't know who's playing left field. It's not that far. This is not, to me, blow it up and this is a rebuild. And the idea, and I know everybody's sort of like, this is the new mantra. They're 2 or 3 years away. If they're in the playoff hunt next year, I don't know if they're going to eclipse the Dodgers. Probably not. But if they're a wild card and ensconced in a wild card seating towards the latter part of next year, I would not be surprised whatsoever. That's just sort of the fate of Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Again, but a lot of that is, yes, you've got to make some changes. Clearly in the bullpen, you've got to do something in terms of your starting rotation. I don't have an issue 1 through 9. Yes, there's going to be some changes, but it's going to be sort of fringe changes. It's not necessarily like you got to blow it up and rebuild. But to me, what's more important, what's paramount, is cultivating the right culture. And right now, this team goes out and expects to lose. Just like when they won 107 games.
They expected to win,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so whether that's Vitello or whatever that is, you need to isolate it and you need to exercise it as soon as possible.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I don't think that next year, their pitching just seems so lost right now, Dan. Landgroup last night goes 5 2/3 innings and he did, you know, gets tagged for 4 runs there and it just...
Las Vegas was built for stars. Here we go.
And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the same pattern with Landon all the time, where the first couple innings go really well, and then in the fourth inning, it all starts to fall apart. He was moving pretty smoothly last night. He was pretty efficient with his pitches the first three innings, then he gets into trouble in the fourth, and he was allowed to clean up his own mess last night, and good for him. He was able to get out of it. But Landon Roop's a guy who you're looking at to be kind of a future piece of this rotation. And
well, he's at number two right now.
I am starting to kind of really kind of side-eye what we're going to be getting from Landon Roop on a start-to-start basis. Because, you know, I asked him last night, like, why do you feel like you struggle after the, you know, going to the second, third time through the lineup? And he mentioned that, you know, he has a battle plan that he follows the first time through, but he gets off of it second or third time, and that's when things start to fall apart. You notice he also doesn't attack the zone as much second and third time through the lineup. He's good when he attacks the zone. But then when he starts, you know, playing around on the edges, that's when you have that 35-pitch fourth inning where you walk the bases loaded and you get into trouble and you balloon your pitch count up and shorten your start. Like, he needs to turn that around and start getting more efficient innings here and stay more consistent with these starts. And you can say that about a lot of the starting pitchers on this team who are not Logan Webb, who is pitching today. Your rotation right now next year, Dan, it's Logan Webb and it's four question marks.
Exactly.
Your bullpen next year, it's a returning Randy Rodriguez. You know, you'll have Matt Gage maybe Keaton Wynn, maybe Brubaker, but all that is still all question marks. Yeah. They got to figure out their pitching situation. They need to figure out their fundamentals in the fielding situation. And they just need to come in next year with a clean slate and let's just start over. I don't think they're going to be in playoff contention next year. I think you're looking at 2028, best case scenario for an arrive early situation. Let's keep this conversation going on the other side. We are approaching the break here. What's going on with Willy Adames? We'll hear from Tony Vitello on the other side. We're also going to hear from Paul in Palo Alto. And then our big story that we're going to talk about today is Brittany Garoli of The Athletic wrote had an interview with Buster Posey and wrote a big article in The Athletic about it. Yeah, he did not paint him in the best of lights. So the Buster Posey legacy. So that's going to be a topic on the show today. Again, it is the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good.
Now back to the best Giants talk in the Bay. The Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7, The Game.
You're right, Risotto. It would be nice if the Giants could, you know, light it up on the scoreboard. You know what was lighting up last night? That K-pop Demon Hunters drone show.
Oh, how was that? Oh,
I have no idea. I was down in the bowels of the stadium listening to Tony talk about the sad state of the Giants, but I saw a video of it, and it looked pretty cool. So I really wish I could have seen that instead of the things that I did see last night, which was just more abject sadness coming from the Giants clubhouse. And I'm saying this with, like, a smile on my face, like I'm laughing at this team. Dan, I love the Giants. I've been a diehard Giants fan since I was 8 years old. I love this team. I can't be like one of those sad or screaming angry fans. I'm one of those, like, I laugh through the absurdity of it fans, like, because that's all you can do at this point. Like, if you're one of those Giants fans, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, but if you're one of those Giants fans who's just living and dying with every win, right, every win or loss, you're going to die a lot out there. I'm not going to tell you how to fan, but maybe don't live like that. I'm one of those, you just got to laugh through what's going on here because the absurdity of it all is just, it's comical at this point, unfortunately.
You know who's laughing the hardest? Maybe a little quietly or maybe to themselves, Gabe Kapler? Farhan Zaidi? Maybe Bob Melvin's chuckling a little bit?
I think Bob Melvin's, yeah, he's definitely doing, you know, the Kermit the Frog thing with his glass of wine somewhere.
Has he ever laughed?
Bob Melvin, did Bob ever laugh when we talked to him?
No, is that a possibility a with him?
You know what? He kind of chuckled a little bit last year when I asked him about putting Rafi at second base. I asked Bob.
I hear
like,
that from time to time. What's
this is something
about?
That no, because this is something that Shasky. I think I've talked about this on the show last week. There was something that Shasky and I had talked about being an option. He's like, what if they did try Rafi at second base? And so I threw that question randomly at Bob Melvin. And he was like, oh, I was not ready for that question. No, probably not. Bob was also, I think, you know, 3/4 of the way out the door there. So I could have asked about playing Rafi at first base. He probably wouldn't have given me a straight answer. So,
well, it's interesting. Why don't we just start there? Because usually when a team is this bad, and I don't, none of us expected them to be this bad, whose fault is it? Or do we even play that game? Because instinctively, you want to point fingers, and usually heads will roll just sort of, you know, because somebody's got to lose a job, or you need to, you sometimes you just need to shake things up at the very top so that you're giving off a PR or marketing perception that we do care and we want to make changes and we're letting everybody know that this is not acceptable. Like the status quo of the way we're playing baseball.
Yeah.
Is not something we can tolerate.
No, the standard and expectation is higher than this. No, so it should be. Like it
whose head would
is.
Roll then?
I mean, I think the blame game is so systemic, Dan. Yeah. I think so much of it is on the players and the leadership. I don't look at what Willy Adames and Rafi Devers have done as players this year, and I don't look at them as clubhouse leaders right now. I don't look at them as guys who set a tone of, you know, playing hard, playing fundamentally sound, and taking accountability for your actions. Willy is fighting an IL stint on to go, you know, because of his back. He doesn't want to go on the IL because of it. And again, I so much appreciate Adames' desire to play, and I don't take that for granted. You know, the best ability is availability. But there also comes a point where it's like, if it's hindering your ability on the field, if it's impacting your swing, if it's impacting your ability to throw a ball from shortstop to second base and not lob it like he did the other day on Wednesday, and then he immediately starts stretching that back out, it has to come out of the game. It's just like, dude, if it's impacting you on the field like this, take 10 days off to get right. You know, so it's lack of player accountability. Coaching has not been great. You put a lot of blame on the coaching staff. That's learning. And then you look at the front office. I think it's, you look at Zach Manasian because it was apparently his idea to go after Tony. You look at Buster Posey because it was his idea to stick it out with this bullpen here. You go after Greg Johnson, who made the decision to put Buster Posey in this role, or was, you know, agreed to put Buster Posey in this role. I don't think there's anybody who has a larger slice of the blame pie than anybody else. This is, every slice is equally doled out as far as I'm concerned in this situation.
Well, I think when you mentioned it, just starting with Adames, I think that that's not necessarily the player, but that doesn't that get back to Tony Vitello? Why is Adames making that call? Why is Adames deciding whether or not he's had enough? I mean, to your point, if you're now a detriment to the team and we're not a good baseball team because of you, well, that's not, your decision's been taken out of your hands. Me as the manager, I've got to cut that off at the pass. And I think that's one of the things, should Tony Vitello come back next year, clearly at the top of the list in terms of improvement, is that he's got to control that locker room and he's got to control that clubhouse. And how does he do that? He cannot be deferential to the veterans any longer.
What I would, like, I like to play, Dan, call it the truth serum game. You can inject someone with truth serum, ask them whatever you want. It's not a very complex game. I would, like, if you like truth serum Buster Posey, your truth serum Tony Vitello, your truth serum Willy Adames, and you ask the question, does the coaching staff or does the manager have the respect of his highest paid players? I'd be very curious as to what the answer would be. I'm sure if you asked fans on the outside looking in, do you think that that respect is there? I think it's very easy to say no in that situation. That perception cannot be there next year. Simply put, like, you cannot have this. And again, I'm not saying this is fact. Like, there are, again, I'm going to bring up the gaps that I don't see here. But it there's a perception that I think that the veterans on this team just aren't vibing with this coaching staff. I don't know if it's because of the inexperience of the coaching staff, because so many of these coaches have never been in the big leagues before, whether that's all, you know, well, why should I listen to you? I've been in the league for X amount of years. You haven't. I don't know how much that factors into it, but it does create, I believe, a vibe or a feeling that this these teams, these highest paid players, are not vibing with this coaching staff, and that does kind of trickle down to the rest of the team.
Oh, it's huge.
To the point where, you know, you have a situation like last Saturday where Landon Roop gets caught stink eye and Tony Vitello in the dugout on national TV because he got taken out of a game. And it's like, this is what happens when the older players set a tone that maybe you don't need to respect this coaching staff. I fear that that does matriculate into the younger players who do the same thing. I fear that that is the situation we're getting to here. And again, maybe behind the scenes when the games aren't happening, everybody's friends and having a great time. But then when it's time to lock in and be baseball players, it's just not there. Maybe that's how it is. I don't know. But it's not a situation that you want to see play out, or it's not a perception you want to see play out with your favorite baseball team. Let's go to the lines here really quick, and we'll keep this conversation going on. I don't want to keep Paul on hold for too long. Let's go to Paul in Palo Alto. Paul, how you doing today, man? You're on the roast. Or, sorry, the wrap. Ugh.
What's up, guys? I think I'm doing a lot better than the Giants.
I would hope so, Paul.
I agree. There's no point getting upset. I mean, I think they've been irrelevant long enough now to having expectations is kind of crazy, in my opinion. But I do have a little bit of a gripe with what today's conversation in terms of rock bottom. To me, rock bottom means that it's the absolute lowest, and I don't really see it like that. As far as, to me, the Giants are kind of like a restaurant or a business where you walk in and it's like, it's not just one thing that's wrong. There's nothing right. And it's hard to blame anyone in the restaurant. So to me, it's the ownership and everything stemming down from that. And I know Bill Newcomb was removed for seemingly much less than what the Johnsons have done to this franchise in terms of results on the field. And Posey and the Larry Bears and so forth. And to me, it's like the fact that we can't even come up with a single name as to who is responsible for this gigantic mess is really the issue. I mean, we could talk about bullpen and rotation pieces and all that, and they should improve next year just by virtue of luck compared to this year. But Nanasian, as far as being the head scout for Farhan and then now being he's a failed GM, in my opinion. What's the point of replacing Vitello if you're not going to replace Nanasian is my point. And so Vitello's not a major league manager in my eyes. I'm just a guy sitting on my couch. But if you're going to fire him and not Nanasian, what faith do we have that Nanasian's going to get the right guy? Who wants to work for Nanasian that has choices in terms of like respected veteran MLB manager? So to me, it's kind of, can we find an architect to be responsible for the entirety of the organization? Or if not, then just let next year play out and then clean house 2028. I don't really see the point in firing one guy and letting everybody else kind of hang out. I mean, what's the sacrificial lamb here other than ownership? So I don't know. That's my question for you guys.
Hey, Paul, are you giving Posey a pass?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, he's the guy. It's, he's the one that's brought Manasian in. He's the one that's promoted Randy Wynn to his position in player development. But I mean, I don't know. Can you fire a Posey? Is it possible for him to fail upwards and take Larry Bear's position and then replace Posey with hopefully your next Andrew Friedman? I don't know. It seems like a...
Oh, it's a good question. Yeah, it gets money when you're owner.
Honestly, Paul, that's not that crazy of a proposition there. Thank you very much for calling in on that one.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Deanna Roga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know how this ends for Buster. Let's look at the Manasian part of his call first. I do think it's a situation where I think if a head is going to roll just to please the masses, he might be, unfortunately, the guy who draws the short straw there, because you gotta provide a head. The people like their heads. But there's also a part of me that thinks, like, if you moved off of Tony, I feel like you got to move off Buster too. I don't think you can move off one without the other. Like, if you move off Tony, I don't know how I feel about Buster hiring another manager right now. But if you move off Buster, no new general manager or president of baseball operations is going to come in and want to stick with Tony. So I do think if you move off one, you got to have to move off the other. And if you move off two of them, then you got to move off all three of them. You just, once you move off one, it snowballs into just, you just got to clean house. And that's just what you got to do there in that situation.
I don't think we're there yet. Unfortunately, or fortunately, however it is that you look at it. And I'm not talking about the record. I understand that head should roll. I just don't think that ownership, whoever's going to make that decision, is willing or brave enough to pull the plug on Buster Posey a year and a half in.
I don't think, and this is where we're going to get into the Athletic piece too, that talks about Buster Posey's legacy and how this job is impacting his legacy. I don't think Buster's going to get fired. In that, I don't think you're going to read a press release that says Buster Posey has been fired as president of baseball operations. I think you're going to see potentially one of three, maybe four options play out over the next year and a half, Dan. Option number one is going into this offseason, they're going to be like, you know what? Things aren't going well. The farm system's good. Buster, we're going to give you an extension now for the next year or two, and we're going to give you a chance to clean this up. That's option number one. Option number two is Buster's going to go in basically on a lame duck contract next year. Things will go well. And then come August, hey, Buster, we're going to give you an extension. Option number three is same thing, comes in, lame duck season. Things don't get better. Come August, yeah, you know what? We're going to go in a different direction at the end of this year. And I guess the fourth option is at the end of this season, he announces, you know what, this isn't working out. I'm stepping down. Tony says, you know what, this isn't working. I'm stepping down. Notice how none of the words I use there are fired. It's going to be, you know, we're going a separate direction, a mutual parting of ways, stepping down. Like, I don't think the word fired is going to be used for any of these guys if they do leave this organization.
Well, we talked about potential culprits. So who do you put the majority of the blame on if we were to divvy up this pie? Is it Buster Posey? Is it Vitello? Is it Manasian?
I am putting it on as a 1-2 on Buster and Manasian, just because they are at the top. The buck has to stop somewhere. And I think they would even admit it themselves that as the leadership of this organization, they are the ones who they should be falling on the sword for how things have played out this year. And that's just taking basic accountability for how things have gone. If this season was a rip-roaring success and they're 72-50 right now, we're, you know, building monuments to Buster and Manasian potentially, because we're giving them all the credit if things are going right. We're giving them all the credit if Tony was the genius managerial hire. We're giving them all the credit if Rafi and Willie are leading the charge this season. So conversely, the fact that Tony's not looking like the greatest of hires right now, the fact that Rafi and Willie are not leading the charge, the fact that this team is actually 50-72, conversely, yeah, if you were going to put it on them all if it was going well, I think you got to put it on them all if it's going poorly. And that's just the unfortunate nature of this business.
Can you see a scenario where management or ownership comes to Buster and says, hey, listen, you've got to do one of a couple of things, but namely, you've got to get rid of Tony Vitello, or, and they'll leave that door ajar, meaning, or you got to go. So, you know, sometimes it's either you or him.
Again, I think that could easily play out at the end of the year, Dan. Yeah. I can absolutely see that playing out. I don't know if ownership would hold Buster to the fire in that sense, because remember, he is still part of ownership.
Well, that's where it gets a little muddy.
That's where I think that the stepping down makes more sense. But again, it's just, I'll say this, because I know I said a little while ago, you can't fire one without the other. You can't remove one without the other. I will amend that a little bit to say that I think there's some wiggle room to where, of the three, Tony doesn't come back and they do give Buster one more chance. But again, you're going to have Buster hire another manager. Right now, I have a hard time wanting to give Buster an extension beyond next year. I know I said that might be one of the options that could play out. It's not an option I'm betting money on.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're Buster, you're going to hire your second manager after dismiss. You're going to hire a second manager after you dismiss Bob Melvin and Tony Vitello. And then you're going to try and hire a third manager when you yourself are on tenuous ground with 1 year left on your deal. That's a, like, Dan, if you're a manager, you're looking for stability. You're looking for a good place where you can go and have success as a manager to where, you know, you could beef up your own. Because no manager wants to take a job and then just get egg on their face. Like, if you're a manager, you're talking to the Giants. First question I'm asking is, are you going to be here in a year? You know, are you going to be bringing in players that are going to respect what we're doing here? And those are two very basic questions that I don't know if Buster would have the most fun time answering right now. So, to this all said and done, you're almost in a situation where you have no choice but to kind of stick it out with the trio you have right now and just hope things get better. And right now, that's kind of what we're doing. Again, I'm going to reference this article from The Athletic here that Brittany Garoli wrote. And it sounds like Tony is going to be coming back next year. One quote here is, some inside and outside the organization fear Tony Vitello. Sorry, wrong line here. Here it is. I look at the job that Tony and his staff are doing. This is the Buster Posey line. And I don't have any reason not to believe that what they're doing isn't going to get us to a place where we're playing more consistent winning baseball. That's what Buster Posey said about Tony Vitello. So that's either a vote of confidence or the dreaded vote of confidence. We'll see. But I think right now this all leans up to they're going to run it back next year and just hope that everyone learned their lesson, and hopefully we'll do better.
Yeah, that's kind of tenuous at best.
I have a quick thought.
Yeah, go ahead.
What's your quick thought?
Well, not a quick thought, just a quick tidbit. Remember, this will not be... But Tony Vitello is not Buster's first managerial decision. Remember, he was the one that picked up the option to bring back Bob Melvin, who he later dismissed. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of 0-2 in terms of managerial decisions right now.
And I think he gave Bob Melvin the same sort of vote of confidence just before he canned him 3 weeks later, right?
Exactly. I mean, what he did in picking up the option, I do think when he picked up that Bob Melvin option, I think he was trying to do, there was a little bit of a motivating factor there, I think.
Yeah.
And that's just like, hey, I'm going to buy in on Bob. I need you guys to buy in on Bob. And it failed. And you saw it happen again this year when they brought up Bryce Eldridge. Buster tried to empower Tony to address the team, and it just didn't really work out. So 2 years in a row right now, Buster's tried to do something to shake things up for this clubhouse, and it hasn't really worked out either time. So let's get into this Athletic piece that Brittany Garoli wrote. And again, it's a fantastic piece, definitely worth checking out. Buster Posey's Giants legacy is on the line as adulation is shifting to anger. Just right off the rip, Dan, just big picture on this article. When you read it, how do you feel like it painted Buster Posey?
It was sort of interesting to hear Buster Posey be that sort of contrite. He usually is not that transparent. So I enjoyed hearing Buster Posey sort of admit his mistakes. But I also think that, to me, I don't necessarily have an issue with his decisions. A lot of them haven't been right, but that's sort of the sword you live and die by as a GM, right? Like, sometimes they're just not going to land. And he admits as much. I thought it was really interesting when he made the analogy from being a player to what it is he's doing now. You strike out four times, but you can self-adjust on that fifth plate appearance. But when you make the wrong move, it's the wrong move, and you live with it. But I think that's, to me, what's more concerning, believe it or not, is Pride Night. Like you can't lose the community. You can do things wrong, because I think that's sort of baked in. There's always going to be high level of risk when you're trading players or whatever it is that you're doing in terms of trying to make your team better. But you can't lose the community. And you know who's the best at that to serve as a perfect example is Steve Kerr. Like, Steve Kerr is not the president of baseball ops, but Steve Kerr doesn't necessarily have to go out of his way to embrace what it is that, you know, the progressive way things are done here in San Francisco. But I think everybody knows that dude's one of us.
Yeah.
And he does a really good job of communicating with the community. And so with everything that's gone wrong between the lines with Buster Posey, to tack that on top of things, that's a toxic cocktail.
Yeah. For me, reading this whole thing, I got a couple pictures from it. One was that it almost kind of painted Buster as a little almost, I don't know if overreactionary is the right word, or maybe there's an impulsiveness in there, but there's one line in there where he's talking about how, you know, driving over the Bay Bridge every day. Here it is. Yeah, Posey said he decided to take the job after driving over the Bay Bridge nearly every day and catching himself fantasizing about the Oracle Park stands being full in October again. The image drove him past any hesitation. And there's other lines in here where it's like, you know, when he first took over as the part of ownership, he said he had no interest in Zaidi's job. But 2 years later, Posey took the lead in extending Matt Chapman, which was kind of, it made it obvious Farhan was on his way out. And I think Buster saw where this organization was under Farhan Zaidi. He saw the fan frustration that was taking place under Farhan Zaidi. And he was just like, you know what? Like, I'm going to fix this. I can be the one to fix this. Like, he almost kind of overreacted to what he saw there and said, you know what? I need to be the one that takes the wheel there. And where I love that intent, I love that energy, it just hasn't really quite played out in a way that has justified that thought process there. And he goes out, he makes the big deal for Willie Adames, because it was almost an overcorrection there, because what was the big knock on Farhan? Can't close big contracts. So what does he do? He goes out and he throws the big money at Willie Adames. See, look, guys, we can get the big free agents. The whole thing on Farhan's idea was he couldn't pull the trigger on the big trades. What does Buster do in his first year? Pulls the trigger on the big trade for Rafi Devers and takes on that huge contract. Overreactionary, I don't know if that's the word, or he overcorrects a lot. That maybe that's the better word I would use, is so much of Buster Posey's tenure here has felt like such a massive overcorrection from the Farhan Zaidi tenure that it's taken this team in a completely different direction, but still on the path of just not being a good enough baseball team.
But at the time, did any of us really sort of collectively have an issue with his decisions?
No, because I think
you needed a shortstop.
Mm-hmm. You needed a third baseman, too.
And Willie Adames was the best guy out there, and he was a free agent at the time. He had just compiled a remarkable season, the last two seasons with Milwaukee. So getting Willie Adames, I think right across the board, everybody's like, right on Buster. The fact that Willie Adames hasn't been very good, how much of that can you put on Buster Posey? To a certain degree, the length of the contract is a bit of a concern, but sometimes you have to acquiesce in order to get these guys. Rafi Devers at the time, I think that if, you know.
Oh, Dan, I'll be.
We were to revisit
Giants
that.
Fans were clapping like seals for all three of those moves. We all wanted, we were losing our minds at the end of the 2024. Because we knew that Matt Chapman was going to hit free agency and Farhan was going to let this guy walk. And Buster had to step in and get that deal done. And to me, it announced the official end of the Farhan Zaidi era when that happened. And our guy Ruderman was out there. He even asked Farhan, hey, with this deal being done, do you feel like you're coming back that next year? And Farhan completely dodged the question. You know, hey, we're trying to keep this day about Matt. And my thinking is reading it, it's like, well, then why are you up there? If this day's about Matt Chapman, why are you up there if you're not going to be back next year? And so that's kind of what that moment announced. We love the Adames deal. We finally got our guy. He's going to be the culture carrier here. And then with Devers, I mean, it's, Dan, the Giants and Dodgers were on Sunday Night Baseball. I barely watched a lick of that game because I was too busy looking at Rafi Devers highlights. Like, we were all soaked by all three of these deals. And it's just, but I also think that goes to show, because I think the other thing this thing painted him in is, painted him as, this article, is in over his head. He made three deals that I think we as fans would have liked, but there's a reason why we're fans and baseball executives are baseball executives. This game is a lot harder than MLB The Show makes it seem, and it's almost like he took this thing over, tried to make a bunch of moves that you would make on MLB The Show. Video games in real life just aren't the same thing. So let's keep this going on the other side. 888-957-9570 is the number to call or text. Buster Posey's legacy is on the line. How is his performance as president of baseball operations impacting his legacy? We'll get into that on the other side. Brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Raleigh Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Raleigh Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.